Let's make it happen, Captain.
From deep inside the Death Star, I'm Larry Larson.
I'm Gov Maharaj.
And welcome to Defrag. Glad to have you. We were off last week. I was at the Worldwide Partner Conference, so that was interesting.
Had a good time.
Great time. Yeah, it was.
Where was it?
It was in Washington, D.C., and stayed in the hotel right next door to the White House. That was interesting. Could see people coming and going from the White House, which was kind of cool.
Very cool.
Tons of partners. I think there was, like, I read some, there's 15,000 partners there.
And you met every last one of them.
My hand is tired from shaking so many hands. But it was really interesting. And you, I heard you redid your dev box, right?
I did. I redid my dev box this past weekend.
What does redid mean?
So my previous, well, it's basically the same box. This is the one that I use for work. I built it and I use it at work.
Yeah.
It's a older Xeon. I put it together back in 2009.
Mm-hmm.
A W3520 Xeon 8-way, processor. About last year sometime I'd upgraded it to max out the board at 24 gig.
Yeah.
But I decided, hey, you know, I need a fresh start. My machine was getting crafty, just tools upon tools, mm-hmm. loaded and old dump files, and it's just been a Franken machine. I just throw on anything for testing purposes on that box. So it needed a fresh start.
So 24 gig of RAM, are you just, you're just using straight RAM? You aren't doing like a RAM drive or anything?
No RAM drive, but I'm using it as a VM server with client Hyper-V, which makes reproducing issues so much easier. It makes, you know, spinning up a new VM just mm-hmm. amazingly fast. I got a RAID 10 array in there now, 10 terabyte RAID 10 array. Super, super fast. The OS drive I've upgraded it to a Samsung 840 Evo, 500 gig hard drive, or SSD, and then I've got a straight 256 gig SSD as blank drive, nothing but temp.
Yeah.
So, you know, just throw stuff on there.
Yeah. Nice catch.
I use it as a build scratch drive, you know, stuff that's just only there temporarily.
Yeah.
It makes it super, super fast.
Yeah.
Two new video cards, GeForce Ti 740s?
Mm-hmm.
720s. Okay. So either 720 or 740, I can't quite remember. Two gig cards. I previously had GeForce 9800 GTs.
Yeah.
And it's a big step up. It is a massive step up.
So I redid my main machine at home, which, you know, a fair amount of gaming happens on it, and I went ATI. What was the choice that made you go with NVIDIA?
I wouldn't call it fanboyism. I find that they do more frequent updates.
Drivers,
yeah. The drivers tend to be pretty stable.
Mm-hmm.
They eke out, you know, a fair amount of performance out of them. I don't know, just basically the stability. I've had really, really good stability with NVIDIA cards. I haven't tried, to be fair, I've not tried an ATI card in a long time.
Yeah.
It's been a good 7 years since I've tried an ATI card.
So I was all ATI for a very long time, and then I went NVIDIA for two cards. Two generations of my computer.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm back to ATI, and it's all about the iFinity.
So I mean, that's something
games,
that I never use.
Yeah, for games, iFinity absolutely rocks. I mean, playing a 6,000 pixel wide version of like Sniper Elite 3 is off the chain.
Right. I drive four monitors, so it's really for me more about the being able to drive the screen real estate.
Yeah.
And being able to drive the Hyper-V is a big one for me.
And so sound? How's the sound? Loud?
I use headphones.
Yeah. No, I meant you did liquid cooling, didn't you?
Oh, yes. That was the other thing. I switched to a self-contained CPU cooler, liquid cooler.
Yeah.
And the system is much quieter. I was able to rip out a bunch of my fans. This thing really moves air. So if you have like the back of the machine, the back plate of the machine, a fan, radiator, fan, all blowing air out the back.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got one additional case fan at the front that blows right at the hard drives.
Yeah.
Keeping it cool. So it's got one intake at the front and then that massive outtake. It's keeping internal temps on that system very, very nice and much quieter. I swear I had some bearings go out on some previous fans. I had a RAM cooler and I don't even need that anymore.
Nice. And so before we get started, one of the things you wanted to talk about was getting an accurate picture of your disk usage.
Right. People in the past have, you know, always kind of wondered, well, what is my drive usage? Explorer would never really report individual folder usage accurately because you would not have access to it. People would download tools like WinDirStat. There's, you know, numerous graphical tools. One of the problems with that is simply looking at it a single point in time, right? It's like, okay, yes, I have disk usage. But what you tend to want to say is, well, how is it changing over time? Like, can I go and clean stuff up? You know, that's just a canonical one. Hey, this directory uses massive amount of space. Can I just go and delete it?
Yeah.
Generally speaking, no.
Yeah.
But I wanted to show you, and that is not going to do it. So there's a built-in tool called DFP. DFP. So this is the built-in tool into Windows 8.8.1 disk footprint tool that allows you to do a lot around getting a better idea of what your drive usage is. You can take snapshots, you can take summaries, you can analyze it. The anonymize is kind of an interesting one because what this will do is sanitize PII information. So if you're wanting to send this as log information, for example, you're able to do that. It is actually really interesting on being able to compare over time, compare growth over time. So you can do like a disk growth study. So this is just an interesting tool that you can take a look at, and you can run it periodically, say every month, every few months, and just take a look at what is taking up your disk space.
Cool.
Some common places are, of course, your temp directory. And when you find that your disk is being used heavily, what you want to do is run the disk cleanup wizard elevated.
Yeah.
So as an admin, in order to clean up the most possible usage on your drive. And in the future, we're going to be improving on the heuristics and the places that disk cleanup wizard will actually go and clean up. Right now, it's relatively limited. It's been it's not been heavily maintained over the years.
Yeah.
But we're getting a resurgence on addressing disk growth.
Cool. Okay. All right. First question from Andre. I have a question. When I open the charms bar and tap on search, I expect that the on-screen keyboard opens. I always have to tap into the text box to get the keyboard shown. Is this an extra step by design, or do I have an issue?
Technically speaking, it's by design. It's because you have a keyboard attached.
Yeah.
When you don't have a keyboard attached, it will be automatically focused, and the on-screen keyboard will come up.
Okay. From Gavin, is there a native way to add folders to this PC under Windows 8.1?
So he's talking about here.
Yeah.
There is not. However, you can add it to your favorites.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. From Sterling, is there a way of knowing if a IE search accelerator was released by Microsoft or not? Bing now supports secure HTTPS searches, but the accelerator it comes with IE still uses non-secured HTTPS searches. And in the past show, you said something about going into the registry and making IE use HTTPS search in Bing by default, but today I found a Bing search accelerator in the IE gallery. It uses SSL. I just don't know if Microsoft released it or if some dude just put it together.
No, we actually released this one.
Okay.
This is ours.
That was the one he was talking about, by the way.
Yep.
Cool. All right. The new Surface Pro 2, or Surface Pro 3, I'm sorry, comes with a pen with a purple button at the end. When pressed, it causes OneNote to open shortly thereafter. Is it possible to change the application that opens this way?
Nope.
No registry entry?
Nope.
All right. Next question. I have very limited data and therefore require a browser that will minimize my data consumption. From my research, I've gathered that Chrome's mobile browser is good, but I could not find a similar option for PC Windows 8 version. The best I found is Opera, which seems to have a turbo option, which apparently compresses web pages. Do you know of a better one for Windows 8.1 laptop? It's an interesting question, but I mean, it's the web server that sends down the page. And outside of like turning off graphics and disabling Flash, is there a way to make smaller?
You can sort of do it, depending on the browser.
Because if something was getting compressed, I mean, it's already come to you uncompressed. So unless the file server, the web server, compressed it first.
Well, what you actually want to have happen is that the web server doesn't serve you the data at all.
Yeah.
Right? So what you can do, and you know, based on the research, Opera is a decent one for this, but there's numerous things that you can do. For one, you can increase your temporary internet file cache. Doesn't matter what browser you're in. Just increase the cache so it doesn't have to download as much.
Yeah.
The other thing that you can do is set your browser up to report itself as a mobile browser. Typically, web servers will not send the same rich amount of data to a mobile device because they know that it's data constrained.
Yeah.
You can do that as well. There's numerous third-party tools that will install, say, a proxy server on your system that does additional caching.
Mm-hmm.
I remember way, way, way back in the day, at home, I would have a Novell, if you can believe this, Novell border manager server that would do this. It was basically a very large cache before hitting the main internet. So you would be...
your little corner of the internet.
It's designed so that you're maximizing your bandwidth, right? You're not constantly downloading the same stuff over and over and over again. So you could do that. I've set up an IIS accelerator, at home. You can do things like that. Same idea. They're proxy servers.
Yeah.
But beyond that, there's really not much you can do if the web server is serving you the data.
Yeah, yeah. And how would you set up your IE to be a mobile browser?
You can do it a number of ways. So with the developer tools, there is a method in here to change your user agent string. Emulation. Yeah, here we go. Browser profile, you can change to Windows Phone.
Nice.
You can change your user agent string to something else, Xbox.
Very cool.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Windows Phone 8, Windows Phone 7. So if you change that, you can change what the web server will see you as and what it will send down to you.
Yeah. Okay. All right, next question. Is there a way to find the RAM type, DDR2, DDR3, of the system using a command prompt? I've tried system info in the command prompt, but it did not display the RAM type.
Yes and no. The problem is that we don't expose that through any normal command line tool, but it is exposed through WMI. And there's some methods of using WMI as through a VB script, for example.
Yeah.
And I've got the VB script here. And one of the things to look at is this memory type property of Win32 physical memory.
Okay.
And what's interesting is that if you run that, which I've already pre-run on the system, the memory type comes out to zero.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't really help much.
Yeah.
Right? So if you go back to here, we haven't actually updated DDR3 as a very specific type.
Okay.
So what you're looking for is, if you see 19, you know that it's DDR2.
Yeah.
There's other values for older, I don't think it's in this article. There's other values for the memory type, but basically DDR3 is anything greater than or equal to 20.
Okay.
Or greater than 19, because we didn't actually do anything beyond DDR2. So if you see zero, which in my case is zero, this system is actually running DDR3, or better.
All right, cool.
I'll be looking at updating this table. For some odd reason, we thought, we don't need to do this anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
Nobody cares about getting the DDR memory type out of a system.
One person does.
All right. Clearly one
person
does.
Yeah, one viewer. Okay, next question. The Windows touchscreen keyboard allows for many emoji characters, but how can these be accessed without a touchscreen? I would have thought they should be available through character map, but that means I need to know the correct font in advance, and where would they show?
Actually, any Windows 8 system, you can add the touch keyboard. If you right-click the taskbar, you go to Toolbars, you can choose Touch Keyboard.
Yeah.
And because this is a touch-based system, here it is, here's the emojis, here are various types of emojis that, for some odd reason, people like. I don't know why.
People love their emojis, yeah.
Right. Okay. So there they are. You can access them.
Yeah.
You can do everything through this on-screen keyboard with a mouse and keyboard if you don't actually have a touch screen.
Yeah. Pick of the week time. Time for the pick of the week. And we have a couple different picks of the week today. The first one is 130 free ebooks from Microsoft.
Right.
And yeah, this is a collection of the largest collection of free Microsoft books ever. You got some Windows 8.1 books, some Office 365, all kinds of stuff. There's
this
something for
Eric
everyone.
Eric Ligman's
there.
Blog.
Yeah.
And that is off of MSDN.
That is a ton of free books. So get your read on.
Yeah, I mean some ones that you wouldn't really even think of, like Windows 8 accessibility, designing apps for accessibility,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
This is something that a lot of developers, especially third-party developers, tend to forget.
Yeah, and it's something that's big at Microsoft.
It's something that's massive.
There's
we
a
have
lot of
many
people
teams
who talk
that are
about this
that are dedicated to that.
Yeah.
Some things here, you know, just to wrap your brain around some of the aspects of programming and customers that people tend to forget about or they don't realize that they even exist.
Yeah.
And we have lots of different products here, you know, SharePoint, Office products, Dynamic CRM.
Mm-hmm.
What else?
Love me
got?
Some Dynamic CRM.
PowerShell, lots of PowerShell stuff.
Yeah.
Cloud computing. This is amazing stuff. You know.
Link server. Yeah, there's something for everyone there. And so, you know, it's summertime. Throw these on your portable device. Go lay in the hammock.
And have some fun,
read
man.
Read some books. Have a great time.
You know what? I don't know if you're going to get much better fun than A Developer's Guide to Dependency Injection Using Unity.
Hey, I would
really.
Actually love to flip through that.
Or, so, you know...
The funny thing is,
this is some fun.
This is kind of my reading for the summer anyway. So.
Or, you know, An Admin's Guide to BitLocker Administration Monitoring. This is,
yeah,
this is getting your groove on,
one.
People.
That's, yeah.
This is really, you know, throwing some tunes and really just sit back, lay back, and relax in some BitLocker.
Yeah. Of course, you can read that one right before bed, too. So the next one, the next pick of the week, is a cool article I saw about LucasArts. Which this is a bunch of people who were on the LucasArts game team, and they talk about some of the different apps that they made, like going way, way back. We're talking about the 80s and stuff. And so they kind of, you know, flip through them and talk about each one a little bit. But one of the things that I found really interesting here, there was one paragraph here. Yeah, he says, during the presentation, David Fox shed more light on this. We were told up front that we were not allowed to do Star Wars titles. I was really upset. And that kind of broke my heart because I remember back then thinking, LucasArts, why won't you make a good Star Wars title? And eventually we did get X-Wing versus TIE Fighter. But yeah, it was kind of an interesting read. So if you're big on old games, which Gove and I both are.
I do love retro gaming.
Yeah, so this was it was kind of interesting. And then the next pick of the week on old gaming we have here is 10 tips from the programming pros, and it comes from spring 1984.
This is a link off of this particular article, by the way.
Yeah, and it's and I clicked on that and saw all these 10 tips for game devs, and I thought, what?
Right,
that's
here.
Really, I mean, let's look at how this applies 30 years later, and you see stuff like fail fast, which today is still something that people embrace. So there's a lot of tips here, and it's just kind of interesting. If you're a game dev, go through here and leave us a comment about which ones you think might be deprecated or old and don't apply anymore, and which ones are as true today as they were 30 years ago.
Yeah, along the same lines with retro gaming in the store, and this has been true on the desktop for a while as well, but I really like the immersive aspect in the store is they have old Nintendo emulators.
Yeah.
And if you, and I've done this before on this very machine, and I do love it, you go get the Xbox 360 wireless controller.
Yep.
You plug it in.
Mm-hmm.
You load up the Nintendo emulator.
Yeah.
Throw on some ROMs, however you may find them.
You take your cartridge, blow on it, and plug something
into the
USB.
In directly, and that's how you get your ROM off of your legally purchased cartridges.
Yeah.
And you can play, you know, your old games on a tablet, on your big computer.
Yeah.
And it is so much fun.
It is
absolutely amazing. Just being able to take this anywhere, you know, and get your groove on. You know, you could even have it say one side is your game, the other side is your BitLocker manual, right?
Yeah.
And dude, that's some zen right there.
It is. I've sat on a plane with my Surface Pro up in portrait playing like a tall old arcade game, mm-hmm. and there's just like people like, oh my god.
You must have like 10-year-olds.
How do you do that?
Behind
I want to do
on.
That. And it's like, yeah, it does rock. It's awesome. So yeah, and then the next pick of the week, which is also old gaming related, is 10 video games from 1990s that are still better than games today, which I love these kinds of lists. And the first thing that I do when I look at one of these is I see where XCOM ranks on there. And that way I know how accurate the list is.
Because or how XCOM, biased Larry is.
Because XCOM is the greatest game of all time. So, and XCOM doesn't even make this list, but it was kind of interesting. They had some games like Diablo 2.
Which I can totally agree with.
Okay, we can agree there.
I've spent many a day and night playing Diablo 2.
Yeah. StarCraft. It was popular, I'll give you that.
It was, yeah.
So yeah, I personally, I would have liked to have seen Command & Conquer mentioned rather than, I mean, you know, I guess it's only 10 games. Gran Turismo 2?
Yeah, for a racing game.
Yeah, it was all right at the time. GoldenEye.
GoldenEye, still
gotta give that one up, yeah.
And it's still one of the best overall immersive gameplays. Hard game, but not, you know, insanely difficult.
Yeah.
But you get some good hours playing out of that one.
Yeah. Legends of Zelda and Pokemon Red Blue, which we'll lump those together.
I'll do Zelda. I mean,
yeah.
You know, playing Zelda for hours on end, it's always fun.
I didn't really play it, but I'll give you that. Resident Evil, all right. Tony Hawk Pro Skater, gotta give it up to that. That, fair enough. And Super Metroid and Final Fantasy VII. So, yeah, interesting list. One of the interesting things, though, is when they talk about 10 video games from the 1990s that are better than games today, I'm really happy to see that a lot of the games that are created today are kind of based off, like, I'll load a game every once in a while, and I'll be like, this is just, you know, X old game
mm-hmm.
turned into
Rescanned.
Flappy Bird or whatever else. So it's interesting that they're going back to some of these old games for the ideas. So.
Nostalgia,
Exactly. I'd also add to that list NBA Jam.
You would.
Yeah, there weren't any sports games on there, so NBA Jam, come on, he's on fire! All right, and that is the show for this week, so if you have questions, you can write us in the show comments, or you can send us an email at defrag@microsoft.com or defragshow@microsoft.com, we'll get either one, and we will see you next week.
Take care. We'll be right back.